Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone.
Hello, welcome to the 3-0 show. I'm Bridget Tiroli. I'm here with Eno Saris. It is Thursday, September 14th, 2023. 2.5 weeks to go, give or take, of the regular season. We've got people clinching, we've got divisions decided. And we have chaos in other areas of the sport. We're going to dive into some of that. A huge injury to the Rangers, Max Scherzer. We're going to get into, this was Eno's suggestion and it's terrific. What do we remember about the season? What will we take with us? I think everybody has something a little bit different, depending on who you watch, who you root for, who you hate, what you appreciate. There's going to be a lot to discuss with that because this was such an interesting season. The first season under baseball's new rules, which now feels like we've been playing with them for 10 years, but it's really only been since April. So Eno, how are you on this lovely little morning? Morning for Eno, afternoon here for me. What's new? What's exciting? We missed Derek. That much is we don't even have to say it. Derek, come back.
Yeah. All is well here. Felix, my older son, has a broken wrist, but we have continued his throwing program. Ah. So yesterday, he managed to get to 30 strikes in our bullpen session. So people are happy in the household here.
I love that we just got a medical, like, legit baseball update on Eno's kid. It's amazing.
It's still 3-6 till he gets the splint off of his non-dominant hand. But and he may miss all of fall ball, which he's not excited about. But we're going to watch some games for his teammates and cheer them on and maybe keep score, which is how I got into baseball.
Same. Fall ball. I love it. Yesterday I was on Foul Territory. I guest hosted for my friend Scott Braun with AJ Brzezinski and Eric Kratz. And off air, AJ Brzezinski and Eric were talking about their kids who are a little older as well and fall ball and the pros and cons of it. And I have a 1-year-old and I just was like, man, I can't wait until my kid's old enough for fall ball. I know there's all kinds of headaches, right? I have my weekends. I can do what I want still. I got to bring him, but I can.
I don't think that I've ever, if there is a possibility of being saturated and having maybe too much baseball, it comes sometime around October when both kids are in fall ball and I'm watching the playoffs on my phone while I'm watching their games and maybe having to post something, you know, on my phone from a game as a parent, taking them to batting practice, taking them to practice, talking to them when we get home, playing MLB The Show with them when we get home, putting on, you know, playoff games when we get home. It's like, oh my God, this is a lot of baseball.
This is maybe I've hit my limit. Oh God. Yeah. But this is such a great time of the year, in my opinion. Sports are starting. The weather is turning, at least where I am, right outside of Baltimore. And we are getting into fall baseball, which means we are getting into playoff spots. Last night, you know, the Braves, an absolute juggernaut. They won their sixth straight NL East title. You know, they went and said the right things. The job is not done. We know they are a very good team. So certainly let's give them their due. But it's so fascinating because Ronald Acuña Jr. posts this big celebration video on his Instagram and he says, quote, "If you don't like it, stop it. If you can't stop it, admire it. If you can't admire it, keep it down so everyone else can enjoy the show." Then Phillies manager Rob Thomson, I don't know how this got brought up, said on some morning show on the radio, "I like my guys to act like they've been there." Which approach do you like? And are we getting old, like very old man on my lawn? Like, can guys not flaunt after they clinch? Is it not enough? Because they, you know, the Phillies were in the World Series last year, not the Braves. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I don't know. The Braves also won the World Series recently, true, and they have been there. So it's just weird because, you know, acting like you've been there is kind of, it can be boring. I mean, you want someone to like clinch the NL East and be like, "Well, you know, the real job is to get to the World Series. So, you know, I don't care."
Yeah.
Right? Like if you're a fan, that's what you want. I don't want that. I want to see them. Did you see Michael Harris?
Yeah.
I want to see that, dude. I want to see them maybe a little drunk. I don't know. You know, like I want to see them like doing weird dances, yes, and spraying each other and having fun. So I, acting like they've been there. I mean, I don't know. I have some sympathy for the pitcher sometimes when the hitter is celebrating a lot. But I think that failure is a part of the game. You have to allow that other person to celebrate what they've done, and you have to separate that from the bad feeling that you have in that moment that you gave up that homer. And you have to be able to say, okay, I gave up that homer. It's not his fault that he's celebrating. He's just celebrating that he did something good, and I need to be better. You know, these are separate feelings. I think we conflate them. We feel bad and we see the person celebrating and we think we feel bad because the person is celebrating, right? And that's not the case. They're just celebrating. That's separate from you feeling bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, like, to me, like, baseball is maybe the only sport that has this debate. I know in football for a long time, people really took issue and maybe still do with touchdown celebrations, right? Like, act like you've been there. But to me, when you clinch a division, no one is now going to rally. My issue in football is it's 7-0. The game ain't over yet. You shouldn't be acting like you won the game, right? But
and also, if you celebrate like just you defended a pass or like you tackled a guy for a loss, like, you know, it can get too granular. Like that's like maybe pimping a single or pimping a walk, you know,
yeah.
Like people like I can sort of get like, okay, we don't want celebrations in every single play
or like a solo shot and you're down 10 runs. Like there are time and places, I think, for these like things. And for me, clinching the NL East is the time to celebrate. No one's going to take it from them.
Exactly.
They clinched it and like act like you've been there. It's interesting because I was in Baltimore Monday and the Orioles are on the precipice of clinching a playoff spot, right? But do they celebrate? They have that weird, do you celebrate clinching a playoff spot or do you wait until you clinch the American League East? But what if you don't clinch the American League East? This is what happened to the Mets last year. If you remember, they clinched and they had a very muted thing because they were like, "Well, we're going to win the NL East." And then they totally cratered and didn't get that celebration. So I feel like you should celebrate. You should celebrate when you clinch a playoff spot because you don't know.
Plus it's a game. Yeah. It's a good point. And it's such a game of failure that that's another reason to celebrate. You know, it's like there are so many times in baseball when you were just down. You know, you've been 0 for whatever. You've had a month where you hit 100 or whatever. You know what I mean? Like there are so many times when you're down. And there's so many people who measure, you know, the success of a team just based on if they won the World Series or not.
Yeah.
So that means that basically there are 29 losers every year. So yeah, celebrate when you make it because, you know, the likelihood is you may not celebrate again.
Yeah. You know? And you know, this has been going on since February. So baseball is such a long sport that to me, like, this is a culmination of a lot of hard work and a lot of people. And make no mistake,
right,
I don't think, maybe this is a crazy opinion, I don't think we're even halfway through the reign of the Atlanta Braves. When you look at the ages of some of these guys that are part of this core, like, this is a juggernaut, an absolute juggernaut. Like, we're at the end, the tail end of this Astros reign, right? And then when you look below the farm system, you're like, oh, they're not going to be able to probably sustain this unless they get real lucky in free agency and trades. But you look at the way the Atlanta Braves are set up, It is nuts. I mean, all they've done is sign these young players to very team-friendly contracts. They go and they trade, you know, not they don't trade. They trade for Matt Olson, but they don't let Freddie Freeman, they let him go. It's a huge ordeal. Matt Olson is quite possibly just as good as Freddie Freeman and cheaper than Freddie Freeman. He sets a Braves record for home runs. He's having a season that I feel like more people should be talking about. Then you have Acuna, like right there in the MVP discussion. So you look at this Braves team, and juggernaut is a good word, but also it's crazy to think that they are right at the beginning of what could be like a 4-5-6 year reign, not just in the NL East, but in baseball. I mean, they are so good. We don't even talk about them very much on this show because it's almost like boring to be this good. It's like, well, there go the Braves again, winning the NL East. Like, here's the Braves. They're still good. Still got a great young core. It is absolutely fascinating when you look at how that team is set up and also what they've done around Truist Park in kind of creating that whole battery and the way they've been able to make money off of all that land. Now, every team wants that too. The Braves, are they the model franchise? When you look at the stadium situation and you look at the roster situation, are we not giving them enough credit for maybe being the best franchise in baseball right now?
It's pretty amazing. The one thing I'm surprised that they actually went over the luxury tax this year. I thought that they were under that, but they still have money coming off the books next year, and they can you know go spend again. You know, in terms of Eddie Rosario coming off, you know, Charlie Morton being a club option, Colin McHugh, Kirby Yates, Brad Hand. So they're, you know, that represents $30 or $40 million that they could spend in the offseason if they decline those options. And so they've got this really great core, and they've got some flexibility around it. They are bringing cash in, so there's no reason to think that they can't keep spending at this level. I love a lot of the things they do. And one thing that stands out for me is they are on pace to tie the major league record for team home runs. And it's interesting because that record is from 2019 when we had the rabbit ball. And this year's ball does not fly as well, and yet they are on pace right now for 307, 308 homers. Like, I think 307 is the record. So they'll be right there where they might pass the record on the last day, and they'll do it without the benefit of the rabbit ball. And I asked Matt Olson about this when they were in town recently, and I said, why are you guys so good? Why you guys hit so many homers? You know, is it because you prepare better than any other team, or, you know, what is it? And he said, no, I mean, yes, we prepare well, but I think that one of the things that is true is that we are different. Each of the players on this team has different strengths. We hit different balls well. You know, we have high ball hitters, we have low ball hitters, we have free swingers, we have more disciplined guys. And so there's no one way that you can attack our lineup and say, you know, oh man, you know, I once talked to Chris Young, who's now the GM for the Rangers. And I said, aren't you afraid to throw high fastballs when you throw like 88, you know, are those homers? And he went through the lineup for those A's back then. And he was like low ball hitter, Coco Crisp. I got to worry about him. Low ball hitter. So, you know, those guys can be pitched to, and maybe that was part of why, you know, some of those A's teams went out early. But this Braves team is just really diverse in terms of their approach. And so there's no easy out, no matter who you are. If you're a sinker baller, there's somebody's going to get you. If you're a high fastball guy, there's somebody's going to get you, you know?
That's an interesting point, because we talked about how the Rays have done such a good job in previous years of having a diverse bullpen. Because it makes it really tough to match up, right? Because they've got like an answer for everything. But having it, you're saying now, and what I haven't thought about is having a diverse lineup really helps you, because you can't pitch them one way. Every guy is different. And so if you're a starter, you're going through and you're like, okay, I feel good about this guy and maybe this guy and this guy. But this guy and this guy, like, my wheelhouse is their wheelhouse, right? So it's my best versus your best. And it just makes for, you know, a really laboring experience to try to get through these lineups. Like, they just don't have you look at this Braves team, like, they just don't have a whole lot of holes. Yeah. Especially offensively.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, pitching wise, the bullpen, you know, has his strengths and his weaknesses. You know, the rotation, they've been really trying. They've been bringing a lot of young guys up, and they may have that depth. But, you know, when you get into a postseason series, you can shrink that down. It doesn't matter as much right. who your five starter is or whatever. So it seems like Strider got right in their clinching game. He was great. He showed great command, at least. The velo wasn't quite his A-plus velo, but and he early on he had some fumbles with the command, but once he got going, he was vintage Strider. So I think they've got an ace. They've got a number two and a number three, and so in a short series, they're going to be really hard. I can't. They're definitely the prohibitive favorites for the World Series.
Yeah, I don't think that there's even like a close second. But like, I mean,
the Dodgers' rotation problems. Yes. Like, you know, they're not. Yeah.
No, that really Urias and Kershaw, like they've got a bunch of issues. Bueller. When you look at it, though, you know, you've said before you grew up a Braves fan. There's a whole generation of Braves fans around the country because they were on TV. Like, are these that could we be seeing now in the midst of like another like 1990s kind of Braves mini dynasty, mm-hmm. right? We could very well be in the middle of that.
This one's very different. Yes. This one's very different. Yes. This is not built on pitching.
Yeah, you there's know. No Maddox Smoltz answers. Yeah.
We'll get into some of the stuff I actually remember from those days. You know, this is a mashing team that has good enough pitching to make it work. So as opposed to a team that was built on pitching and defense. But we'll see. You know, one of the things that people ask about what does well in the postseason, and when I've looked, I found in fact that hitting is more correlated to postseason success than pitching. Crazy. So, you know, there's the whole adage of like pitching and defense wins championships, and I'm not sure that's true. You can slug your way to championships too.
Crazy. I mean, speaking of,
like, remember those Nationals, right?
Oh, that
like,
team was crazy. Speaking of celebrations,
I mean, they had like three good pitchers or four good pitchers, and they managed to make it
they
through.
They trusted five pitchers, including their bullpen and their rotation. Five pitchers they trusted, and they did it. Yeah. They did it, which is remarkable. And you're amazing. Right. A lot of it was their lineup. A lot of it was their starting pitching going so deep that they didn't really need relievers, right? Like, I don't.
Right.
Recent history, you got five and dive guys all the time in these starts, but that didn't happen with the Nats. Guys were going 7-8 innings. One, because Davey trusted them. Two, because Davey had to trust them. He had two relievers there in the bullpen.
And no other options.
It was nuts. Yeah. We're talking about like celebrations. Like, yeah. I have such a vivid memory of Steven Strasburg, who is so painfully shy. He like won't even walk by and say hello to you. I have a vivid memory of him dancing in the clubhouse with Gerard Parra, and they're hammered, right? And they're just dancing, and like, this is a guy like letting loose. So these celebrations are so cool for that moment.
Exactly.
You know, like, these are moments you're never going to see again.
I have a big memory of Charlie Morton crying after they won with the Astros, and, you know, crying because he's so happy for his teammates. Yeah. I was like, you're a good person.
So Max Scherzer, I also remember him on the big stage when they won the World Series with the Nationals in 19, like crocodile tears, just like so emotional. No one loves to win more than him.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
That brings me to our next unfortunate topic, which is Max Scherzer done for the season. He had tricep issue in his last start. I said this yesterday on the Foul Territory podcast, but I truly believe that Max can pitch through almost anything. But when you're talking about an arm, there's no way around it. Like, he pitched around a hamstring. He pitched around a back. In the World Series in 19, he couldn't move his neck and was able to get enough work done But there's no pitching around a tricep.
Didn't he break his? He's the guy who broke his nose in batting practice and didn't miss his start.
It was like in between the doubleheader, and then he started. Like he basically looked like Rocky, and he's out there throwing. Yeah. He's like, I'm fine.
No, but I tore my Terry's minor, and he has a Terry's major issue, and it's like you just can't. It's like it's super painful, and you don't have the same. Just on the same force, he would throw like a 85 mile an hour fastball. I'm pretty sure. So,
which is unfortunate, because he had actually, you know, he wasn't very good with the Mets. The Mets have their fire sale. Texas gets him, and he actually had been pitching better with Texas than he had in New York. And so, and he's also a guy who, you know, as you know, is an ultimate competitor. He rises to the moment. So you felt like, okay, we get this guy, and we get into the playoffs. And for Texas, you know, they're fighting right now to be in the playoffs. They were such runaway favorites. Then they nosedived. Now they're kind of on the climbing back up the roller coaster, right? They've won, I think, 5 straight as we tape this on Thursday. And to me, this is a huge blow. I mean, even if he wasn't throwing well, and he was, Max Scherzer's a guy you want on your team in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's tough because they may be able to survive with some decent depth, given, you know, the acquisition of Jordan Montgomery and Nate Eovaldi coming back and Dane Dunning kind of breaking out. But Dunning's kind of, you know, not pitching as well recently. And even though they have a top five, it doesn't necessarily help them to shrink it down to three in a postseason series. Like I was talking about the Braves, right? In fact, their five are kind of more interchangeable, especially with Eovaldi throwing 93 miles an hour now. I don't even know how I would order these guys if I had three games. I think I would be kind of like everyone is on deck. Whereas if I had Max Scherzer, I'd be like, okay, we'll start with Max Scherzer, and then we'll figure everything else out after that, you know? So this is like, you know, can we make it to the end? It's not a, we're coming like lions into the postseason. It's more like, can we limp our way into the postseason, and find a way to make some noise? Cause they still could with the bats. But it would be surprising to me if, a team with a front three of Jordan Montgomery, John Gray, and Nate Eovaldi, won it all, I think.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I think when you look at the Rangers and you look at this pitching situation, it seems like Houston is now probably going to win the AL West. They have the easiest strength of schedule moving forward. They're in first. They've gone on a little bit of a run here. They used that window. The Rangers opened, right? So did Seattle to kind of catch up all that ground. And then you look at the Rangers and you're like, okay, we were a little worried about the pitching earlier in the year. Now they're down Scherzer. Even if they get into the postseason, are they set up to make a deep run in your mind?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we may remember this team as the rabbit of the season. You know, just the team that looked like it was hit firing on all cylinders and had the ace pitching it needed and the lineup it needed. It had the best run differential in the first half and, you know, just looked like a total juggernaut of a team that was ascending to its place because they had, you know, put this in place by, you know, the spending and the young guys were coming in and it looked like it was all coming together. And it's amazing how fast things can fall apart. I don't know that, are we going to put this, like, you know, I remember, collapses. So I remember the Padres collapse a couple years ago.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it the Mets with the Phillies, you know, near the end of the season? There was the, there have been some collapses. In fact, I was just looking this up. One of the ones that I remember most vividly from being a kid was in 1993, the Braves overtook the Giants, and I think they overtook them on the last day of the season, and they finished the season 55-19 to win the National League West, which is a little strange, but they won the National League West. It was like on the last day or the second to last day of the season, and came back from 13 games back. So that was a pretty big collapse too. So I don't know where I put that in this group if they don't make the playoffs. Yeah. And, you know, one of the Blue Jays, Rangers, and Mariners is not going to make it. You know, it's two of those teams. And those three teams are all quality teams. But, you know, if the Rangers are the ones that don't make it, I'm not sure I put that collapse on that level because it's not so precipitous. You know, it's not like, oh, with 2 weeks left of the season, they were, you know, division winners and then they were out. But it is something that I will remember like that. You know, it is the sort of rabbit of the season.
Yeah, that's fair. It's really interesting. Is it fair to call them a collapse if they don't make it? Because we're not going to say that about Seattle. We're not going to say that about Toronto, right? Like, it just doesn't exist for the other teams. But because the Rangers were so good so early, and there has been a lot, it's not, you know, it's not just the pitching. There's been injuries, right? There's been a lot of issues that have led to this. But this is going to be a huge disappointment if they somehow don't get in, or if they get in and they get eliminated quickly, because they've been pushing their chips to the middle, right? They did it even a couple off seasons ago when they went and they signed Seager, you know, and they made these big moves thinking we're going to be good soon. And then this year at the deadline, they're like, oh, we'll take Scherzer from you. You know, they trade Ronald Acuna's brother, and no one really knows how good that guy's going to be. And everyone's like, the Rangers are going for it. So to do that, and to either miss the playoffs or to go to the wild card round only, I think would feel like a large disappointment to Rangers fans who really haven't had that run of success since they went to the World Series, those back-to-back years. They're still looking for their first World Series win. And this feels like the window, right? Yeah.
I mean, if you want like a little bit of bright, you know, news in this for the Rangers is that they do have DeGrom and Scherzer under contract next year, and there is a chance at better health. I mean, you're kind of rolling the dice and hoping for better health from that crew every season when you've got older pitchers like that. So. Yeah. You know, maybe late next season, DeGrom comes back and, you know, can pitch two or three innings at a time or whatever it is. And Scherzer makes it through, you know, it's not a question for Scherzer of like, I think he's pretty good still when he's in. It's just a question of when he's going to be healthy. You know, it's like, you know, is he going to be healthy? Like maybe you could do stuff next year where if you are winning, you just sit Scherzer or start skipping him or whatever, just to lighten his load, do some like star load management on your pitcher to try and keep him healthy for the stretch run. So, you know, pitching is one of those weird things where like, you don't want to sit him, because then they get out of practice. They get out of athleticism and out of their ability to pitch even. But you also, you know, maybe just reduce his pitch counts and try to get him to the end of the season healthy. Those two guys are still with the Rangers next year. And so it's not doom and gloom and this is the end. But
yeah,
I would remember them as kind of, you know, the rabbit of the year at least.
Yeah, but DeGrom's not coming back till deep into 2024. Like August, and Scherzer's still getting older. Yeah. So you're right. They have these two great pitchers who, when they're healthy, is great. But when they're healthy is a big deal, right? It's a bigger deal and a higher bar than, you know, two younger guys, right? So when Jacob DeGrom is healthy, he's the best pitcher in baseball. And I don't think there's a whole lot of debate when he's healthy and firing, but we just haven't seen him very much. Is he, you know, is he Sandy Koufax? You just aren't sure, right? So I don't know. It's very interesting. One more quick thing I want to get to before we get into the really fun part of the show. Big, big series as we tape this tonight, Thursday. The Orioles lose the series to the Cardinals, the lowly Cardinals who, you know, I think, have they been eliminated? They're like right there. If not, they're like right on the fritz. They lose 2 of 3. Now they welcome in the Rays. And they're 2 games up on the Rays for a 4-game series. This is probably going to decide the American League East. If it doesn't totally decide it, obviously, because you have 2.5 weeks left of the season, these games, because they're worth double, are going to go a long way in determining who wins, right? If the Rays take 3 of 4, we got ourselves a race here. They're going to overtake the lead. And, you know, and vice versa. Now, if they split, it gets a little hairy, but how are you viewing this? Is the AL East Baltimore's to lose, or do you think Tampa can make a real run here despite missing so many key components to what they thought their team was going to be?
Yeah, the the numbers have kind of always favored the Rays and, you know, throughout the season. And now it's come to such a small sample that the projections do have the Orioles winning 100 and the Rays winning 98 at the end of the season. But you flip one or two games and, you know, you got a tie, yeah. Right? So this is going to be really fun. I think the one of the reasons why things have lined up a little differently now is the Rays end with the Blue Jays six times to end the season out of their last eight, and then the Red Sox the other two. So it's not an easy schedule for them to finish with. The Blue Jays will be fighting for their playoff lives. There's not going to be any for the Rays. There's not going to be any, you know, oh, we got the hangover lineup or all the kids in the lineup, right? Even those Red Sox are playing decently. So their schedule is not cake. The Orioles get instead the Guardians and Nationals and Red Sox to finish the season after these next games. So they've got the Rays and the Astros, but then they finish really easy. And I think that sort of schedule stuff is why the Orioles are now favored to win the division. So I think the Rays, in some aspects, may need a sweep.
Ooh, to four games
put like
sweep.
A little buffer. Well, they need to put a little buffer. Like they need to, or at least like, but see, if they went 3-1, then they're just tied. And then the Orioles still have an easier schedule. A sweep, they get up ahead and they can win, they can lose a couple games, you know, and so that's why I think the Orioles are still the favorite.
That makes sense. Interesting. Should be a really good matchup. Should be a really interesting series. There'll be some really good games from here until the end of the season, but that's one that I think people should circle if they don't have anything going on. Adam Jones is getting tomorrow on Friday. They're going to sign him to a one-day contract, retire him as an Oriole. So should be a really interesting time. I'll certainly be there at some point over the weekend as well. You know, let's.
I think Adam has been a pleasure to cover.
Yeah.
And I think you agree with me on that. Is that you know, one, he reminds me a little bit of Tommy Pham, where he says what he means. You know, he's not afraid to say things.
Yeah.
Which I think is something that is amazing for us as writers, because there's so many people who don't say anything. Yeah. And are afraid to say anything. And he's just I said this about Pham, he's unapologetically himself. I think the same for Adam, where he's just, this is who I am and I represent myself, and you know, I'm willing to talk to you about it. And also, he's a little bit nicer than Pham. So, you know, Adam was a nice smile and a good guy in the clubhouse.
Yeah, yeah, a really good guy and still really considered an Oriole at heart, even though he ended his career in the big leagues here in Arizona. Then he goes to Japan. So should be a nice moment. I agree with you. If any players are listening to this, we appreciate when you speak your mind. Really, we really appreciate totally. It. Speaking of speaking our mind, we're going to get into, in our minds, what this 2023 season encapsulates, because I was reading an interesting article the other day too, you know, that said, could this be the best baseball season ever? And it kind of went over a lot of the, I know. And it's really hard because I think every season is different. So in some respects, it's apples to oranges, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but you look at this year, and I'm going to go first, and I mentioned this earlier, the new rules immediately made this game better. Not once this year did I say, like, God, this game is taking so, we're in like 3.5-4 hour territory, because we just didn't have those games. You know, there were more balls put in play. You saw some guys have better years offensively because of that, especially the lefty pull guys, because of the no shifts and things. And so I think the new rules, and I think watching more stolen.
I like
yeah,
stolen
watching
bases.
The stolen bases, super fun, a great element for people, maybe even casual fans. I think people who aren't nitty gritty baseball still appreciate the art to the stolen base and the excitement of, oh, is he going to make it? Is he going to beat the throw? I think he got his hand in there, you know, that whole thing. So I'm going to start with the new rules as something that we're going to remember and something that's going to set apart as a really great baseball season.
Yeah. I wonder if sort of a great pennant race is what is missing from this. Like I mentioned, I remember that Atlanta pennant race. And I wonder if that's just something we won't have as much anymore because of the so many wild cards, yeah. Right? It's a wild card race. And so now you're kind of looking at, oh, it's three teams and two are going to get in, or it's five teams and three are going to get in. You know, it's a more complicated math. You know, when the Braves were chasing the Giants, it was just those two. That's all that mattered. Only one of them was going to make it. Only one of them was going to win the division. And so it was just really intense in terms of, you know, the quotes that were coming out of both teams, the intense scrutiny, you know, the teams talking about, oh, that team didn't feel their best lineup and that's unfair and they're getting to play this. And, you know, it's like, you know, there was a real, like just a real mano-a-mano kind of thing where it's just these two teams. Whereas I think with the wild card, you know, you mentioned, what was it, 2011?
Yes, game 162.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was the first year of the wild card?
I think it was the first year that...
Was it extra wild card?
It was one of the years where all of the games they decided had to start at the same time, which I think is one of their better ideas in recent years. Because I just remember watching... I was at the Orioles at the time. They were playing the Red Sox. And the Red Sox should have made the playoffs or thought they were gonna, right? And then you have the Rays game going on concurrently at the same time. And so the wild card has created some drama in that sometimes 162 matters.
Yeah, we have a potential for that, I think, in the NL, right?
Yeah.
Like there are five teams that are in it. It's really like there's a lot of teams that are in it that are within one game. So we have that potential a little bit. I remember 2011, though, was on the extreme end because we did get some game 163s even out of that, right? Like it was so tight that, like, you know, there was going to be baseball the next day. And I remember I went with David Appelman to a bar in New York, and we went to a bar that had like every game on. And the thing that was so schizophrenic about it was you didn't know where to look. You know, like it's like, oh, that game, but then that game, but then that game. Yeah. But that was super exciting. I don't know if we'll get on that level, but that's something I remember that we still have the potential of getting this year. So I think that's a good example of where, if this is one of the best team seasons ever, we will want something like that, where we remember a final day. If we remember a wild card race, we remember some sort of pennant race.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Wild cards kind of, you always, a lot of times I think, come down to the wire. The AL West, maybe the division race you're pining for. I know it's still that the second place team goes to the,
It's like a virtual tie, though.
But
it's like three teams at the top there.
It's really interesting, right? That one of those teams is not going to make it. And so like you are, make no mistake, these teams want to win the division, right? No one wants the wild card slot. So there is some intrigue there. You're right. It's not as good as like, you know, you either win the division or you're home in October, right? That, yes, definitely adds a certain element. But
about as close as we could get now, though.
But to have it be a case where, as we sit here and record, Texas is back by a game of Houston. Seattle is back by a game and a half. Which, I mean, we are talking.
That's going to be tight.
We're talking razor thin here. So it's going to be really interesting. And then, of course, L.A. and Oakland have fallen off. Totally off.
Yeah, the one of the Mariners is a good example of something else that I remember from really good seasons are just really standout singular performances and in big moments. And so Julio Rodriguez let me see what I've got for him. I've got a 30 week stretches out here, and he had. It's just ending right here. So from August 5th to September 11th, he had 105 total bases. And it's one of the best 80 streaks in the wild card era. So, you know, and that doesn't even get it right completely, because all these streaks, like, because they're 30-day streaks, Matt Kemp's 2011 shows up three times, right? Because there's the day, you could do the day before, you know what I mean? Like, you could do this day to this day, or you could do the next day to the next day, you know? So, you know, it's really one of the best sort of 30 or 25 streaks of all time. And it's been why the Mariners have come roaring back in this race, because they have good pitching. They have a really great bullpen. Their defense is decent. But Julio Rodriguez's offensive output has kind of put the team on his shoulders. And it's one of those kind of really amazing stretches. I say that, but I then looked at the list of these amazing stretches, and I can't say that I really remember all of these stretches. I feel like maybe players just go hot and we forget about it. I don't know. So let me just read you some of the best stretches of all time. The best stretch of all time is 119 total bases in 2000. It actually spans two seasons, so maybe that's why we don't remember it. It's Richard Hidalgo. So Richard Hidalgo had a great September, basically, for Houston in 2000. I don't remember that. Charlie Blackman is on this for a 2019 stretch. And I guess I remember him being good in 2019, but that was the rabbit ball. You know, I feel like everybody was. And then there are some stretches here that we do remember. Sammy Sosa's 1998, Barry Bonds' 2001.
Sure.
Like, those are the great stretches of all time. And then there's one this year that was better than Julio Rodriguez. And I told you who it was, so I can't play the guess who it was game, but the other guy we're going to remember from this season. Who's the singular guy whose season we were all talking about all season that we're going to remember this year? Shohei Ohtani. He had a better 30 game stretch at some point this season than Julio Rodriguez. And so Ohtani, though, is just one of those. It's almost like Andrew Dawson MVP season, where it's just sad.
I was going to say.
It's the sad part of the season, you know?
Yeah, like, is this, do we look back on 2023? I hope not. It's the last time we see him pitch and hit.
Yeah.
That would also make 2023 a standout baseball season, right? Like, is this the last time we see this? I think everyone is hoping not, but I think everyone is also pretty much expecting next year to not pitch. Right, in some capacity, he's going to have to be rehabbing. Does he return to pitching? Does he become a reliever? We could talk about this for hours, and I'm sure we will this winter when we have nothing to talk about. But, you know, this could be it. This could be the last time we see him start and hit. And you're right. Even by Ohtani standards, he had some ridiculous stretches this season.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I wonder, you know, there's also the funny thing about memory is we're going to misremember things about this, especially if you're talking 10, 15 years out. Like, I have this distinct memory of sitting with my dad watching the Braves play the Giants in 2002. And my dad the whole time is going, mocking me, because he knew that I'd spent so much time in Atlanta growing up and I was a Braves fan, and I was like so annoyed with him. And my memory is that Barry Bonds hit like three walk-off homers in that series and just demolished the Braves, and like, and me being like, geez, Barry Bonds really is like the best of all time. And I looked back and he didn't hit a single walk-off in the series.
It was all in your head.
Like, I don't It was all in my head. He hit the three homers, but I couldn't have seen all three. Two of them were in Atlanta, yeah. I think. And so I saw one of those homers, and it was in the sixth inning or something. And I wonder, are we gonna misremember feats for Julio Rodriguez? Like, Julio Rodriguez had that great home run to tie a game recently, sent it into extra innings, where it was like 3 inches off the bottom of the strike zone. He just lifted it to straight center. I bet you people are going to remember that he won that game.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're probably right. I mean, there's always things in a season that I think we either take for granted or we like forget. Like, Bryce Harper came back from Tommy John surgery in a crazy quick amount of time. And I mean, right.
And then didn't hit homers for a while.
And now he's hitting like clutch home runs again, right? Trey Turner stunk for most of the year and is now back doing like ridiculous things. So
will we just totally forget those slumps?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be like, yeah, Bryce Harper came back from Tommy John. He was fine. He hit 30 homers that year, right?
The one thing I think this season is missing is there hasn't been as much dominant starting pitching. And maybe that is just the way this game is going now.
Or the rules.
But you look at the NL Cy Young. Right? Like there have been some good seasons by pitchers, but we're not seeing, this certainly isn't going to go down as like the year of the starting pitcher at all. When you look at.
Yeah. We don't have anybody in the Cy Young race whose ERA starts with a one.
No, you know? No one's having.
We've had that in the past.
Yeah.
You know, and as dominant as Gerrit Cole has been, he's done it with a lower strikeout rate than usual. So his, you know, his wins above replacement at least isn't as dominant as his ERA is. I think he's the favorite there. I'm not supposed to talk about that too much. But on the NL side, I think it's pretty wide open.
Yeah, three man race kind of.
I think Snell's gonna take it. Because the difference in, like, you know, Spencer Strider has the wins above replacement title, but with a 3.73 ERA versus Steele's 2.49 and Snell's 2.43, I think that, you know, people are still going to hew closer to the ERA than the wins above replacement there. So I think it'll be mostly between Steele and Snell. And then Snell has just so many more strikeouts than Steele that I think that's how it'll go. But you're right. None of those is like, that's the guy. He's the guy who won it. This is one of the best pitching seasons of all time.
Yeah, we're going to totally forget about. We're going to be like, who won the Cy Young in 2023? I think on both sides, we're just going to kind of totally forget about this. Because with Gerrit Cole, the Yankees are bad, right? They're going to miss the playoffs. So it's just going to kind of be a forgettable season in New York.
And in fact, if Snell wins it, it'll be kind of similar too, where it's like, oh yeah, they rode the back of him to not making the playoffs.
Right. So to me, the one, if I'm looking at memories, the component that's missing that's making 2023 like a season for the ages, it had some great standout performances. It had the new rules, as we mentioned, like some, you know, there's going to be some interesting stuff pennant race and wild card wise. But the pitching side, the starting pitching side, is this what we're going to get from now on? Is this what starting pitching is becoming? Or is this just a case of we've lost so many stars? So many stars were down this year. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? It's really interesting to think about.
Yeah. And one last thing that I think about when I think about what I remember from a kid and remember from seasons past is I really remember a trio of players in the Braves that weren't very good. I mean, I just like they had their place in history and they've had their time, and I hope I'm not offending anybody, but like Jeff Blauser, Mark Lemke, Lonnie Smith, these are three players that were role players and you know, were just part of the team and did some things well. Mark Lemke was able to get on base a little bit, and I think his defense was pretty solid for a second baseman. Jeff Blauser had some better seasons where he was actually kind of an offensive force, but he topped out at 17 homers, you know, and was just like kind of a good-ish shortstop that had some really good years. Lonnie Smith was amazing. A Twitter follower reminded me of this. You know, Lonnie Smith in that, 1989 season for the Braves, hit .315 with 21 homers and 25 stolen bases. His otherwise career high, other than that season in homers, was 9. And so he was just like this pop-up star that, you know, helped the Braves to, you know, become relevant again. And so I was trying to like zoom around this year and be like, who are some role players that people will remember this year? And I'm not really sure who they are. I had somebody for the Cubs, Mike Tauchman, as like a guy who came in when they needed someone to didn't have, you know, overall the hugest season in the world, but, you know, was very useful for the Cubs this year. I'm trying to think of other guys that have popped up and really given teams what they needed. We may have to get some off of Twitter. But is there anybody that comes to mind for you?
Role player wise, Ryan O'Hearn. No one's giving that guy enough credit.
Yes, Ryan O'Hearn. That was on my list, too.
You look so confused. I'm like, I think I was playing the game right. Yeah.
No, I just didn't hear it the first time. I'm just having some internet issues. Yeah, Ryan O'Hearn. That's a good one.
Yeah, just guys who you're like, oh, yeah. Like, listen, as I said, I live close to Baltimore. So I think when you're looking at a good team, everyone always loves the Rutschmans and the Hendersons. But then you look at who's actually having a really good year. Ryan O'Hearn is having a really good year. So that's what's fun.
And stepped in when they needed him, right?
Yeah, he's a guy who's benefited from the no shift because he's a pull guy. He's tweaked a little bit with his batting stance. And they've done a good job of platooning him so that he really is always in favorable matchups. But when you watch these good teams, Isak Paredes, great season, Tampa Bay. People aren't really talking about him, right? I love looking at the good teams and seeing below the stars, like who's having a good year that only the people that are watching them every night appreciate.
The
right?
Twins, I think the Twins have a couple like this. Willie Castro has 31 stolen bases for them.
Wow.
And he's above average. Kyle Farmer has been basically average with a bat, but, you know, plugged in, played wherever he needed. And then Donovan Solano is like a singles machine. I mean, he's like their replacement for Luis Arraez. He doesn't hit, you know, .380, he hits .280, but, you know, he gets some singles when they need him. So those are some Mark Lemke, Jeff Blauser all-stars for you, if you like.
Like glue guys, like they need them. If they didn't have them, they'd be in trouble. But like, you're not going to go to the stadium and see like 50 people wearing their jersey. These are the guys.
Yeah,
right?
Well, and then there might be a problem in San Francisco because the whole team might be made of glue.
As we pointed out, there are a bunch of no names. I struggle to know who's on that team because that's how they do it.
The glue on a glue team might be somebody like Blake Sable, who plays catcher, plays left field, has been league average with the bat, stole some big bases, hit some big hits. Or maybe Lawant Wade Jr. that nobody knows who he is, but he has a .374 on base percentage, and his nickname out here is Late Night Lamont.
I like it.
You know, he's a clutch hitter. He's just, I think, in this last series had, you know, two walk-offs, basically, a walk-off sac fly and a walk-off single. So, you know, those guys, especially if you're young and you're watching these games every day, like I bet you my kids are going to remember Lawant Wade Jr. more than most people, because my kid turned to me and was like, they're gonna have to call him walk-off Lamont.
So cute.
Like, yeah, today in the car. So I was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so everyone's got different memories. If you think of any, let us know in the comments, tweet at us. I'm Brit_Giroli.
Yeah, different types of memories too, like different types of players, different types of performances. We talked about big streaks, we talked about sad things, teams collapsing, you know, pennant races you remember. Like, there's all these different kinds of things that we remember.
Yeah.
So I just thought that would be interesting to think about how we remember baseball.
It's,
you know,
really interesting. So, yeah, let us know. At @EnoSaris is where you can find him on Twitter. You can read both of us at The Athletic, theathletic.com right now. Running a special, I believe it's $2 a month. So get in on that if you're not subscribing. Should be a lot of stuff, especially because we're getting into the playoffs. Where stuff gets really juicy.
You had a really interesting piece with Doug Wilder?
Dave Wilder, yeah.
Dave Wilder. That's that's really amazing. And some people were like, well, the fact that he's black has nothing to do with it. I'm sorry. Do you know that there was a whole scandal about kickbacks and he's only one of many that got in trouble? You know, we have some breaking news. Breaking news. Chaim Bloom just got fired.
Wow.
Damn. I really thought they'd give him another year, man, because, you know, I thought if they could get some starting pitching, this team would be better, but that's all he got. That's the chance he got. I mean, it's a tough division. Do you hate everything he's done? I know that people hated the Mookie Betts trade. You know, you kind of expected him to maybe get some pitching in town quicker than this. I don't know. I don't think I would have given him another year myself if I was the owner.
Listen, they finished in last place 3 out of the 4 seasons that he took over.
But it's last place in the best division in baseball.
But they're the Boston Red Sox. They're the Boston Red Sox. And also, not just the places, you know, what trade has he won? What did he get for Mookie? Nothing. Look at the pieces he traded away. What trade could you say Chaim Bloom has won that trade? It's one thing to be bad. It's another to say, are we getting better? And I think the question with the Red Sox was, we're really not. They're not. Mm. So they're in a really weird spot. And also, they're the Boston Red Sox.
I'm just interested to see what happens with Rafaela and Tristan Casas. And like, there's some young players on that team that are good.
Sure. But I think organizationally, did he make it better over the last 4 years? He was supposed to come in and you know, Dave Dombrowski set it on fire, but Dave Dombrowski wins. So he was supposed to make it better. Right. You trade away Mookie Betts. Like, the Nationals traded away Juan Soto. They jumped up their farm system. They went from the worst to like way up towards the top.
As true. As little as I think of their player development, they got CJ Abrams. No, Mackenzie Gore. They got Keibert Ruiz. Like, they got a lot of pieces out of
this trade.
You can
say what you want about Mike Rizzo and what they do on the player development analytics side. That deserves some scrutiny. But they make good trades. And if you look at Chaim Bloom, they didn't really make any good trades. And none of their guys, like, all of a sudden magically got better there either. So I think, like, I like Chaim. He's a nice enough guy to deal with. But you're also in charge of the Boston Red Sox, right? Not the Kansas City Royals or a team in the Central.
You don't get more years. You don't get a lot of years.
Yeah, it's win now. You had four years. Dave Dombrowski got fired after they won the World Series.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I'm sure there'll be plenty
That's a
of
good
coverage.
Point. If you can get fired after you win the World Series, then you're not going to get much time when you come in there.
Yeah, so I'm sure there'll be plenty of coverage up on The Athletic. We have 2 beat writers that cover the team, do a terrific job. So if you don't subscribe already, now is the time to get in on that deal. Again, at @Britt_Giroli on Twitter. He's at @EnoSaris. Follow us. Let us know what you remember. Maybe we'll continue this during the winter because I know there's plenty more we can put in there as well. Derek Van Riper is on paternity leave. He'll be back here in a couple of weeks as well, making sure we stay on time and making sure this podcast is running smoothly. Derek, if you're listening, we miss you, but enjoy all that time with your family. So thanks so much, guys, for listening. We will see you next week.
You always got the green light here.
Green light 3-0, and she's gone.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.